and not be available for reappropriation. So, Mr. Speaker, I think it's an important message. I think it's a message from this body to the public that we recognize that we are approaching a time when there's going to be declining revenues, that we're committed to maintaining the permanent fund and maintaining its integrity, that we're committed to building that fund so that there will be earnings for future generations and for future years to use to pick up operating and other expenses if that need be, and that this body is ready to face head on the problem of declining revenues by readjusting our priorities to look at basic projects, and hopefully the public out there will be willing to do the same. Mr. Speaker, this piece of legislation also offers some flexibility, I believe. It changes somewhat from the original bill that was introduced, and it makes a one-time appropriation of $400 million to the permanent fund from the undistributed income account, but it does offer some flexibility. The information I have is that after we make this appropriation, that there will be remaining something over $300 million in the undistributed income account. It's my view that that money should stay there at this time. It may be that we'll need it for inflation proofing, or we'll need it to help fund a dividend program, but it does offer some flexibility and does give the legislature an opportunity in another year or two, if that fund continues to grow, to come back in and evaluate again where we want to go. And at that time, we may decide we want to deposit an additional amount into the fund, into the body of the fund, or we may decide we want to do something differently. But at this point, we're making the decision, Mr. Speaker, that the highest and best use is to put that money back into the fund and allow it to continue to grow, and the future legislatures can then have an opportunity to address this question again. Thank you.
Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As you know, and many of my colleagues have heard me speak on this floor before, it's time that we chart a course for the state of Alaska that we can be proud of. The legislation before you today, I think, is a step in that direction. It's a step in the direction of closing that revenue gap that we all know is going to exist in 2005. When we're looking down the road and we see financial disaster coming up on the state of Alaska, we need to take prudent steps today to avoid that catastrophe that's going to come about. One of the reasons that I feel very positive about the movement in this legislature over previous legislators that we've had in here and the legislatures that have dealt with the business of the state is that we have been dealing with very difficult issues. And we have been dealing with this most significant issue, and that is, how are we going to construct an operating budget and a budget that we can sustain into the future and balance it against future revenues? The sponsor of the legislation, I think, touched on the significant points, but let me come and tell you that what we're doing is giving definition to what we've talked about when we campaigned to front-loading the permanent fund. This is front-loading the permanent fund to the degree that it'll be producing almost $40 million a year over what it would normally be producing if we didn't take this action. That revenue is going to be there in the future to balance the budget. It's also going to increase dividends during that period of time in which it's actually rolling over. So I want everybody to think and reflect on the action that we're taking, because it is indeed a policy call, which I had hoped that the other body feels as strongly as we do about meeting that commitment, meaning the commitment to the voters that supported us in coming down here to set good fiscal responsible policy. And that's exactly what we have before us. Thank you.
Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this bill is perhaps one of the shortest pieces of legislation in terms of verbiage. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 lines. I agree that this is a very important piece of legislation, that it indeed meets a certain need. But I'd like to offer a different perspective this morning. Mr. Speaker, I think there is a benefit of paying cash, particularly for major projects throughout this state. I'm sure that every member on this floor realizes that we have a young state that is gradually developing into a superpower. And Mr. Speaker, I guess I'm concerned that someplace in the future we may find that this meager permanent fund that we're setting up certainly will not be enough to meet the needs of this state tomorrow. But what have we done in the meantime? We've socked those dollars away with great anticipation. And we're all aware of the time value of money, that a dollar today is worth more than it is worth tomorrow. And Mr. Speaker, when you look at a growing state and its needs to develop, and when you consider the kind of development we need to do in this state in order to have a long-term, sustaining, stable economy, and you realize that we need to today invest in roads, docks, harbors, schools, projects of growth, Mr. Speaker. Now, we have two alternatives in doing that. Well, in fact, we have three. One of those would be to use revenue bonds. Hopefully, certain projects in the state, those growth projects, can be supported through revenue bonds. The other, Mr. Speaker, is through general obligation bonds. But needless to say, if we do that, because of the uncertainty of interest rates, we have a tendency to encumber tomorrow's generation. The third alternative, Mr. Speaker, would be to use a portion of these dollars to pay cash for those. The Speaker from Haynes made a very graphic point on one of the previous bills. Let me do the same thing here, and I'll close. 12 years ago, I purchased a home for my family for $40,000. 30-year financing. General obligation bonds oftentimes are 30-year financing. I add up that payment stream, Mr. Speaker, and I'll find in 30 years I'll pay $120,000 for this $40,000 house. Mr. Speaker, I wish I had had $40,000 12 years ago. And rather than owing still $32,000 after 12 years, I'd have at least that interest that I have paid over time. I present this testimony today, Mr. Speaker, again as a food for thought. It's popular to support this piece of legislation. I'm probably going to vote for it. But I think it's prudent that we consider what we're doing. The dollars are there, the needs are there, the opportunity is there today to pay cash. I'm reminded in my own community, we're looking at some $160 million in needed road projects. These are roads for growth of this state and growth of my own community. I wish we had cash in order to pay for those. We don't have those that cash, and we could have it by diverting some of these dollars to the general fund to be used to finance those. What we will eventually do is leave a legacy to our children and their children that they'll pay for in the future. And with that in mind, I don't think it's wise to continue to pump monies back into a fund that we just don't know its effect, its ability down the road. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of committee substitute for House Bill 28, but I do so with one very clear understanding. That is that the governor will not suggest that this body has been remiss not to put an additional sum of money into the permanent fund from our general revenues. Mr. Speaker, that troubles me. I believe this body has been more than prudent in protecting the resources that have been available. And I want that message to be conveyed to the governor so that in the months and years ahead, that suggestion is not made of the 14th legislature. Thank you.
Representative Boucher.
Mr. Speaker, I rise in support of what I consider to be one of the finest pieces of legislation that has passed this body this year. But maybe Mr. Speaker, as I sit here and I think of what happened, I believe this was before Representative Duncan was even in this House. But I do know that a little over 10 years ago, our governor brought down a budget of $200 million. Most of the schools and a lot of the highways that you see built in this state were built before the hemorrhage of dollars that started to occur in the 80s. We managed to spend every dime that we could on the table. This year, and I compare, we will even, with prudent thinking, in order to bring things under control, still spend in an operating budget, and comparing this to $200 million, we will spend $2 billion. If our population growth was based on the inflation of our spending, we would be passing the million and a half mark. I think this signal of responsibility that Representative Duncan and the other people is a loud and clear message that we are doing now what should have been done 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, if anything, it's not enough. And right now we've got to recognize that the major resource that this state has is its resource dollars. It has moved into second place in the amount of income that it generates in the state. So I strongly support it. And those of you who could run your calculators, if you compared inflation and population growth with the growth of a $200 million budget to $2.5 billion, I would be interested in seeing what the inflation and population rate, if there was a relationship to the amount of dollars that we've managed to push out the door. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I strongly support this, and I am sure the great majority of my colleagues will too.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I agree with the bill wholeheartedly. It is a good move. But I'd like to correct the gentleman from mid-Anchorage. We did in the past put in an additional $1.8 billion in the last few years over and above what is called for by law from our royalty oils. So these people who make the statement, and it was used during the campaign last year quite a bit, which I took offense at, that we spent every cent we can, and it's not quite true, sir. We have approximately $7 billion now. This $400 million will go into it. When we talk about spending every cent we can, I think we can be even more prudent. I feel that the dividend program is not good for the state. There's another $1 billion that could be in the permanent fund dividend program to help run the statement. Our other programs, like longevity bonus programs and so on, the other giveaway programs add to another $300 million in the last few years given away. So I agree with him in heart that we can be more prudent with this money in the dividend program, but we have been fairly attuned to this subject, and that $1.8 billion did help. This $400 million will help better.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise to speak in favor of this bill. It's a commitment to our future and to the future of our children and our children's children. Before I ran for office, looking at this legislative process from the outside, I seem to recognize a real lack of fiscal responsibility and no accountability. I think for too long the state has tried to address a lot of problems by throwing money at it, and it's time that we stop doing that. And I'd just like to add as a statistical note, I counted the words, and I might be off by one or two words, but this is a bill that has few words in it, and just for your information, it's over $3.5 million a word.
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I just have to comment on whether this amount is enough or not enough, and a couple of observations on the permanent fund, which I've followed for quite a while. I think that on the one hand, front-loading the permanent fund is really a wise move, but the reason that you want to front-load the permanent fund is to have a reliable, steady stream of cash coming off of that fund that you can count on for funding whatever you want to fund. And I'm sure that there's some people in this body who favor using it for dividends. Others may favor it for some other purpose. But I think that it is prudent to have and start providing for a large, steady stream of cash. Now, the original purpose of the undistributed income account was to allow a reserve for the provision which says that this steady stream of cash is a five-year average. If there's ever a dip in earnings where you don't have enough to pay that year's cash stream, you draw off the undistributed income account. Now, I've worked out that out of the $730 million that's supposed to be in the fund by the end of this fiscal year, under the worst case, you would need about $500, $520 million. But it's highly unlikely that the worst case would occur. But I think that taking $400 million out and leaving about $300 million in there is about right. I think that that is a prudent amount to take out and a prudent amount to leave in to protect the stream of cash in the future. That I think if you really want to protect the principal of the permanent fund, you want to have some reserve remaining there. One thing that I would like to see the body do before this session or next session is over is to take that remaining $300 million off of the table. There was a comment earlier by the representative from Juneau that this bill did not take $400 million off the table. I think it does take $400 million off the table. One of the problems is that at the start of each session, when we have our first overview, we've had $600 or $700 million put in front of us saying this is an amount available for distribution, referring to the undistributed income account. I would like to see us take some steps towards providing in more certain terms that that remaining money in the undistributed income account is for the purpose of providing for a steady stream of cash off of the undistributed income, off of the permanent fund, rather than just available for distribution for any purpose. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Miller.
Ryan, the buddy, I think they got it wrong on my parliamentary lecture at the beginning of the session. The rule is, if you don't have the votes, you debate. If you have the votes, you call the question. I'd like to call the question.
Representative Sund.
I just would like to add a little bit of historical perspective on this. I believe it was a former representative from Ketchikan, the elderly one, who introduced the bill for $1.8 billion deposit in the permanent fund. And I think this would go a lot right along with that, and I support the bill. And he kind of coined the phrase that this is more or less an investment that we have outside, and we're just trolling up some outside money and depositing it in Alaska. And I support the trolling effort and the increased gear effort we're putting into this.
Representative Pinyalbury.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I want to prick the balloon of the body here because we're talking about front-end loading. This is not front-end loading. Anyone here that campaigned on front-end loading, try to recall what you thought you were going to be doing. We're talking about transferring the wealth, the dollars from the general fund of the state into the permanent fund. And what we're doing with this bill, and it's a good bill, and I certainly am going to vote for it, what we're doing here is taking money out of the undistributed income part of the permanent fund and putting it into the corpus of the fund. This is not front-end loading as we talked about, and if you still want to do that, we still got the obligation. Thank you.
Representative Ringsted, we haven't heard from you yet.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I take a little bit of a different twist. We've been talking a lot about responsibility, being fiscally responsible, trying to make sure we do the right thing here. Somehow it concerns me a little bit when we, as a legislative body, feel that in order for us to be fiscally responsible, we have to lock the money up so we can't get at it. That bothers me a little bit. If we're responsible, why do we have to get the money away from us? The permanent fund's a good idea. I don't have a problem with the permanent fund. I think the problem I have right now with fiscal responsibility, we're sitting up there trying to figure out how do we, in the least painful and least disruptive manner, cut budgets. We've been fortunate for a number of years. We haven't had to do that. Now we do, because in the last 4 months, all of a sudden, we found out we got about $700 million less to spend this year than we spent last year. What happens when we adjourn here in 45 days, 44 days, or whatever it is at this point? We come back, we find out next January that the time we were gone, price of oil went down about another $3 a barrel, $4 a barrel. We're going to be short several hundred million dollars, and we're halfway through a budget year where we already spent the money. Is it fiscally responsible to eliminate your options? I'm not sure it is. What's wrong with leaving the money there? Leaving the option available so we can, if we need to. Maybe the oil prices were going to go back through the roof. I don't know. But as all indications are, we're going to be short, have less money this year, next year, and for several years. And as soon as you start going down in revenues, and as soon as a problem arises, that's not the time to panic and put the money where you can't get at it. That's the time to look and recognize, okay, there's a source of money just in case things really get bad. And I think that's fiscal responsibility, not locking it up.
Is there anyone we haven't heard from? After that, I am going to relinquish the chair to Representative Clarkson so I can wax eloquently, too. Representative Szymanski.
I'll try to make it brief because originally I did draft the definition of front-end loading, and the distinguished representative over here, I worked with the representative that used to be from Kenai on the issue, and we sat down there and we said, what do we call this exercise where we're continually putting money into the corpus of the fund? And we said front-end loading of it, because you're loading it up early on so that it produces additional revenue for the future. So whatever means you get to it, I'll split the hairs with you and we'll semantically call it whatever, but it's still front-end loading. And I hopefully will have legislation before you in the near future which will increase that commitment to it even further. With regard to the representative from Fairbanks, sure, you could grab that $300-400 million out of the undistributed income account, throw it at the budget this year, but flash, it's gone. What are you going to do next year? Fiscal responsibility, very simply, is the same thing that you and I do at home. It's balance our budget. We reduce our budget down to a sustainable level based on the known revenue in the future. That's it, simple and clear. It's when you're irresponsibly living without restraint, escalating that budget way beyond where you can afford to sustain it in the future, and that's where we have it now. We've got to bring it into control, and it's going to be painful. But we've got to bring that budget down so that we can live into the future and not send a legacy of debt to our grandchildren. Thank you.
Are you ready for the question?
The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 28, Finance Amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the rolls? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? The clerk may tally the board.
36 yeas, 3 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 28, Finance Amended, has passed the House.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on final passage of committee says substitute for House Bill 28, Finance Amended, be the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objection to the effective date clause? Representative Pierce. Objection?
Thank you. No.
The effective date clause has been adopted. Representative Pierce.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to serve notice of reconsideration of my vote committee substitute for House Bill number 28, Finance.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on said bill. Would the clerk at this time please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill number 148 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act creating a private cause of action relating to mobile home warranties and transferring enforcement of mobile warranties.
The Committee on Labor and Commerce has had the bill under consideration and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Navarre Chairman, concurred in by Navarre, Köppen, and Hanley, Pierce, Collins, Boucher, and Davis. The Committee on Judiciary has had the bill under consideration, recommends it be replaced with Committee Substitute for House Bill 148 Judiciary with a new title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by M.M. Miller, Chairman, concurred in by M.M. Miller, Grunberg, Son, Taylor, Clarkson, and Pettijohn. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary Committee substitute for House Bill 148 be considered in lieu of the original bill.
Are there any objections to the adoption of the committee substitute of Judiciary? Hearing no objections, the committee substitute has been adopted. Do we have any amendments before us?
Not on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the committee substitute for House Bill 148, Judiciary, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Any objection to the advancement? Would the clerk please read the bill for the third and final time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 148, Judiciary, by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to mobile home warranties.
Do we have any debate? Representative Cotton.
Mr. Speaker, I had a question on page 2, starting on line 8. I'm not sure what that means. Does that mean that a person who has posted a bond, a manufacturer of mobile homes that are sold in Alaska, that's posted a bond, can then cancel that bond for some reason, and then there wouldn't be a fund that the owners of the homes could charge against if there was a defect?
Representative Miller.
Through the chair, the answer is no. That a bond, because of what you see on the front page, always has to be posted. But if for lawful reasons a surety wanted to cancel it, for instance, perhaps an insured might not want to issue the bond when it became due the next year. So the manufacturer would have to then go out and get another insurer to be legal. But the bond always has to be in place. That's the responsibility of the mobile home manufacturer. If for a lawful reason, for instance, as I say, the expiration of the period, the insurance company could decide not to reestablish the bond, you know, the next year if they wanted to. But that still doesn't take the obligation away from the manufacturer to have somebody have a bond someplace.
Representative's question been answered. Is there any further debate? Representative Grunberg.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, in further answer to the representative from Eagle River, that language was added in Judiciary Committee. The language is very similar to the contractor's licensing provision, ASO 8.18.091. As a matter of fact, it was put in at my request. The language in that last statute says, nothing in this chapter impairs the right of a bonding company to cancel its bond of a contractor for lawful reasons. But we wanted to make it certain that this would not extinguish the liability on mobile homes previously delivered and on which the Alaskan consumer would have the right to depend upon the surety of the bond.
Question. Any further debate? Question. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 148 Judiciary pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? The clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Representative Collins, would you care to change your vote?
Apparently, my vote was not recorded. I'll do it again. This will be the fourth time.
Could the clerk unlock the roll? Representative Collins, have you voted?
Yes. Yes, it is. It shows now. Thank you.
Okay. Does any other member want to change their vote or to vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
39 yeas, no nays.
committee substitute for House Bill 148, Judiciary, has passed the House. Still under the consideration of the daily calendar, we have some final action on citations. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the House approve the citations on today's calendar.
Are there any objections to the approval of the citation on today's calendar? Citations are approved. Representative Cotton.
I give notice of reconsideration of my vote on House Bill 148.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on House Bill 148. Representative Herman.
Mr. Speaker, I would like to bring up notice of reconsideration of my vote on House Bill 273 regarding extralateral rights, shore, tide, and submerged land.
Committee substitute for House Bill 273, Resources, has been brought before this body. Is the clerk prepared to read that bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 273, Resources, an act relating to extralateral rights of federal lode mining claims and providing for an effective date.
Seeing no amendments, having no amendments on my desk, is there any debate? Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 273, Resources, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
37 yeas, 2 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 273, Resources, has passed the House on reconsideration. We have effective date and letter of intent. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on committee substitute for House Bill 273, Resources, be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objections to the effective date clause? There is a letter of intent that has accompanies this from Resources. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the letter of intent on committee substitute for House Bill 273, Resources, be approved.
Mr. Speaker?
One moment here. Would the House please stand at ease? House, please come back to order. In looking at my scratchy notes here, the letter of intent was not meant for this piece of legislation. There is no letter of intent on House Bill 273. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that I be allowed to withdraw my motion on the letter of intent.
Are there any objections? Okay, so ordered. We're under unfinished business. Do we have any unfinished business to come before this body? Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Furness be excused from the call of the House upon adjournment today until plain time Monday, April 1st.
Are there any objections from the request of that individual to be excused from the call of the House? Representative Pinyalberry.
Thank you, Mr. And I beg for enlightenment from the Majority Leader. And I wonder, on that last vote we had about the letter of intent, the motion that he made, what letter of intent was he referring to?
Representative Pinyalberry, what happened here as I glanced at my scratches on my notes, the letter of intent was meant for another bill which was not brought up for reconsideration at this time. There was no letter of intent in relation with that bill. The chair just misspoke and miscued the Majority Leader, and I don't know who was made the fool, but nonetheless, we corrected it. If you continue to proceed with this, it gets even worse. Representative Gruenberg.
May we have a brief at ease, please?
Would the House please stand at ease? Will the House please come back to order?
Before that ease, we were under unfinished business. Is there any further unfinished business to come before this body? Announcements of standing committees or special committees. Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I noticed in the committee schedule that it's not listed, but on Monday, the House Labor and Commerce Committee will be taking testimony on House Bills 294 and 295, which is the residential hire bills.
We passed them out of committee, but we're still taking testimony for backup.
Representative Gull.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. For members of the Special Committee on Fisheries, we've got a couple of changes in the calendar, but I guess on Monday I'll announce next week's meeting, which is going to be changed again. But today at 4:30 p.m. in the Barron's Building, House Bill 227 relating to fish processors and primary fish buyers will be heard. I just wanted to remind the members that that will be this afternoon at 4:30 instead of at our regular time.
Representative Gruenberg, committee announcements.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the HESC committee, on the Monday calendar, we had listed HB 335 concerning midwives. Unfortunately, under the five-day rule, the bill was just introduced today. We have to move it back a little bit. We're going to hold that bill hearing on Thursday, the 4th of April. That'll be by teleconference, since there's lots of people around the state who are interested in it. We're also going to deal with HB 279 that was held over from yesterday concerning Alzheimer's disease, and House Bill 311, appropriations for vaccine for health care providers, and any unfinished business also on the week's calendar. That's next Thursday, the 4th of April.
Any further committee announcements? Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The closeout for transportation for finance will not be taken up today. We've tentatively scheduled it for Monday.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May we revert to introduction of guests?
Are there any objections? Proceed, Representative.
I'd like to introduce a friend of mine sitting in the back of Gallery A, Assemblyman Dave Walsh, who represents Spinard.
Committee announcements. Representative Ringstead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The University Budget Subcommittee will be having its final budget meeting on Monday morning, 8:15. Quite honestly, I'm not sure it's either the Belts Room or the Judiciary Room, but I'm not sure which one.
Last call for committee announcements. General announcements. Representative Clarkson.
Mr. Speaker, the Board of Directors of the Alaska Arts Alliance invite legislators to a reception on Monday. This is this coming Monday, April 1st, at the Alaska State Museum, 4:30 to 6:30 p.m., and I encourage all members to attend. In addition, Mr. Speaker, under announcements, it's my great pleasure to announce today that tomorrow will be the birthday of a member of this body, Representative Hurley.
It was your birthday, Representative Hurley. I'd ask you to say a few words, but you got to wait till tomorrow.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Hurley.
That's true. I did have something special I wanted to say, but in lieu of the time, I don't want to have everybody being very unhappy with me, and so I will ask for the privilege of the floor on Monday. Thank you.
Representative Taylor.
Yes, just as a general announcement, I received from a constituent 6 dozen oysters. I have and would like to share those with the body, so I've turned them over to Mark in the lounge. He will be serving oysters Rockefeller and on the half shell as soon as we are absent from these chambers. Thank you.
Any further announcements? Special orders.
Mr. Speaker, under announcements.
Oh, Representative Clarkson.
I will make this just as quick as possible because I know everybody wants to leave. I lost my birthday list last week, and therefore the member who is attempting to escape to the oysters, we should recognize his birthday last week, Marco Pignalberry.
Getting bad as the members of the other body. Do we have any further announcements? This brings us to special orders. Do we have any special orders? Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd ask the privilege of this floor to speak on women in basketball.
Are there any objections to the representative's request? Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A couple weeks ago, the House basketball team won a tournament, and it would have been impossible without the lone female member of that basketball team, Representative Collins, and I can't recall her taking one single shot at the basket during any of the games. So on behalf of the male members of that basketball team, I'd like to present her with this little basket that goes on her trash can so she can practice shots for our next game.
A good point guard doesn't have to necessarily shoot, just run the team. Representative Taylor.
Oh, yes.
Excuse me 1 minute. There's going to be a presentation here.
Yes, I see that.
Thank you. On behalf of the lone female on the basketball team, I'd like to say I didn't have to shoot because Mike Navarre and Steve Frank took care of it. Thank you.
Under special orders, Representative Taylor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I ask permission of the chair to speak upon the subjects of Alaska preference and equal opportunity.
Are there any objections?
I'll try to make this brief, and I know we all want to get out of here. I certainly do, too. My concerns are that, like Paul Harvey, I'd like to give you the rest of the story. On Alaska preference, we have a statute where we've instructed our executive branches in Title 36-15010, and it reads as follows. In a project financed by state money in which the use of timber, lumber, and manufactured lumber products is required, only timber, lumber, and manufactured lumber products originating in this state from local forests shall be used wherever practicable. That makes sense. It's the legislature setting a policy. How many bills do we have before us on Alaska hire and on Alaska preference? We also have bills that require that proper public notification be given in bid specs of that requirement. My fellow representative from District 1 brought to the attention of this body about 2 weeks ago the mismanagement and misapplication of our Alaska statutes by our Alaska Railroad. I'm now here to tell you what's happened since then. This story doesn't get any better. On March 1, when they sent out the procurement order, they had indicated, as my fellow representative has told you, FOB Seattle, which made no sense. So they then changed that and made it FOB Anchorage, and they also added Prince Rupert. The bids were submitted and opened on March 12. The only forest products to be bid upon coming out of the forests of Alaska were bid on and indicated that Wrangell Forest Products was $1,020 above the low bidder on a $264,000 contract. At 4 o'clock when they opened those bids, someone decided that they should convey that information. So they did until 4:30 in the afternoon, at which time someone else decided, either through the Department of Transportation or the railroad, that since they had not complied with this legislature's policy under Title 36 and not notified bidders of the Alaska preference for wood products, that they should cancel that bid. They canceled the bid, but before notifying anyone of that, they had also told some of the bidders what the low bid price was. They then called for oral bids 3 days later. All other parties calling in for the next 2 days, they refused to inform them of any information on the low bid. As a consequence, the matter went to bid orally, and now we have an Alaskan manufacturer who was cut out of the information, unable to participate in that bid. Furthermore, the confidential information given on those original sealed bids was not distributed to the rest of the bidders, and now the railroad is informing us that they have orally let the bid to the Seattle-based broker, and that they don't intend to change that. I'm calling upon this body to see to it that our Alaska statutes and the policies that this legislature has set and dictated so many times to our administrative bodies be carried out, because right now, folks, it's one hell of a way to run a railroad. Thank you very much.
Under special orders, Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, thank you, sir.
I'd like to ask the privilege of the floor to speak on priority legislation for the next 45 days.
Are there any objections? Proceed, Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So, you know, during the past, well, actually from the very beginning, the minority group has said that we would be more than willing to cooperate in helping the flow of legislation. And I think the probably best example of that is that in the past 75 days, including today, we have done something that no other minority group has ever done before. That is, no caucus has ever been called during a session. It was our commitment to you at the beginning of the year to help and not be dilatory in our action. I will admit that we came to it very close one time when something of a surprise nature, and through your ability, you were able to smooth that problem out, and we weren't forced to call caucus during session time. Now, during the past 75 days, a lot of bills have gone through, and they have been expedited to the Senate. But then we do have five or six other major issues that you addressed, I noticed, in the Juneau paper yesterday, and we will cooperate with you in getting those very needed bills through. However, there are issues that have not been addressed yet that we, as a minority caucus, have taken positions on because we feel these are of such magnitude and interest. We would like to ask you, sir, to consider these bills, there are six of them, or the issues, six major issues, and ask your committee chairman to do something this session to address these issues and get the bills over to the Senate so that we will be patient enough and hopefully the Senate will pass them before the 14th legislature is out. Mr. Speaker, our caucus has chosen the two most important bills, House Bill 178 and 179, Crime of Conspiracy and Hearsay Evidence, as being most important. And throughout the state in the last 2 years, we have heard a lot about this. I was at a meeting yesterday, just by coincidence, at the Juneau Chamber of Commerce, and they heard the information about these bills, and hopefully that Chamber of Commerce will support the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce on the need in upgrading our criminal laws. The next bill of importance, sir, a priority, it's not much in money, but it's extremely important when you consider prevention is cheaper than cure. Mr. Speaker, this is House Bill 31, Vaccine for Healthcare Providers. Over the years, we have been able to help numerous people, young people who are probably more financially restrained, by providing vaccines for them. We've heard that throughout the nations, in our colleges and in other small communities, that people are beginning to ignore the normal immunization programs that are available for children. The $250,000 requested in this particular bill, sir, is very minor when you compare to an outbreak that may happen any place within our big state. The next bill, sir, of importance is H.J.R. number 18, coupled with another issue, election of the lieutenant governor and election of a state treasurer. Those have been spoken about, and probably when they're on the agenda, we'll speak about those more. The fourth in priority, sir, was House Concurrent Resolution number 12. It had to do with state lease purchase of a state office building in Anchorage, and certainly a lot has been said about that, and it's even more imperative that we have this bill before us so that all House members can talk about it. Fifth in priority, sir, House Bill 146. This is housing loans for severely disabled people. Mr. Speaker, as you know, over the past few years, the disabled people had worked very hard to upgrade themselves. We put a lot of money to help them make them independent, and this would encourage them to become even more dependent, especially friends I have and others within our caucus have who are actually adults but need to be either living with their parents or they're currently living in an institution. They're perfectly capable of living in a special home for the disabled. They need help. They can become independent, and we wish you to expedite this bill. And fifth, it was, I'm sorry, the last bill, sir, is HB 26, which was even surprised to me that it made the majority, verification of residency of candidates for certain public office. So we've known over the last few years, I'd say at least since 1974, when the problem first developed, that of all the 19 residency laws that we have in this state, every agency also has the responsibility of verifying the residency. And in the past election, as well as the last four elections that I know of, there have always been problems with someone who files candidacy who supposedly did not live in that area. It's a very simple fact for the Department of Election in most cases to merely take the voter's candidate's applicant, verify the registration card of that individual to see if they had been living in that area for the appropriate time. That's one way. If they have to go further, they can do that. But I think it's extremely important to democracy that people know when they believe they want someone who lived within their neighborhood to represent them, and suddenly after an election they find out the person did not live there the proper time. So, Mr. Speaker, in the realm of harmony and in cooperation, we do ask you, these are not the major issues of the state, and we know that your majority caucus has some real big issues that need to come forth, but we do ask you if you will consider these bills and help expedite them out of the House this year. Thank you, sir.
Representative Gruenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To respond to one of the bills that the distinguished minority leader mentioned, I'd like him to know...
Are there any objections to the request for the special privilege of the floor?
Thank you.
Proceed, Representative Gruenberg.
That the leadership in the Hess Committee has already scheduled the vaccine bill, and that's HB 311. It's due to come up next Thursday, as I mentioned earlier. It was only introduced a week ago, and we share the minority's concern. I don't want to make this a partisan issue. It's an important bill, and we've already recognized.
Representative Maru.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to request privilege of the floor to speak on liberty in the legislature.
Are there any objections? Proceed, Representative.
Thank you. As you know, Mr. Speaker, today I have introduced several measures, all of which I would term pro-individual liberty and anti-big government. For example, HCR 24 petitions the governor during this next fiscal year to request no increases or supplemental appropriations for the operating budget, to propose no new programs, to hire no new nor replacement personnel, except for judges, troopers, and emergencies, and to streamline the cabinet from 15 to 9 departments. HJR 28 would allow the people to amend the state constitution by initiative petition and would allow such petitions to decrease or to transfer appropriations. HB 341 would reduce signatures required for nonpartisan candidates nominating petitions. HJR 29 petitions Congress to repeal that portion of the Alaska Statehood Act which prevents individuals from owning mineral rights. HJR 30 proposes an amendment to the Alaska Constitution allowing individuals to own mineral rights via conveyance from the state. HB 339 encourages municipalities to tax less and limit their bonded obligations to that level currently existing on the North Slope. HB 344 does away with state-funded primary elections and requires political parties themselves to announce their candidates on September 1st. It also restricts campaign spending to 2 months instead of 5 months. HB 343 clarifies that the city or the borough only is responsible for its municipal bonds, not the state. HB 340 would repeal the continuing appropriation of $21.7 million yearly for the Power Cost Equalization Fund, which essentially benefits Bush residents at the expense of city dwellers. HJR 27 urges Congress to study and to reform the Federal Reserve System. HJR 26 would join Alaska with the state of Washington in a lawsuit challenging the constitutionality of the Federal Reserve System and to obtain an audit thereof. And lastly, HB 342 would affect certainly all of us, repealing all the state taxes on motor fuels, which now go up to 8 cents per gallon. If these measures are enacted, Mr. Speaker and fellow colleagues, they will significantly increase liberty for individual Alaskans, and they will begin to reverse Alaska's current position as the biggest per capita and therefore most socialistic state government in the history of the United States of America.
Any further special orders, Representative Thompson?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request the privilege of the floor to speak about House Bill 338, an act establishing a state lottery.
Are there any objections to the representative's request? Proceed, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Today I introduced House Bill 338, an act establishing a state lottery. I would like to explain to my colleagues my reasoning and request that they give it serious consideration and also consider becoming co-sponsors of this legislation. Simply put, Mr. Speaker, I find that it's difficult as a legislator involved in making decisions on how to spend money, and I trust we all appreciate the fact that those decisions are becoming increasingly difficult. Indeed, this year, if not difficult, painful. I find it difficult not to also find it part of my function as a representative of the people to figure out ways how to raise money, additional money, new money. My thinking, Mr. Speaker, is that perhaps this law should be referred to as an act establishing additional state revenues, because I find that the nature of the beast and the word lottery causes some people's passions to be mixed. Be that as it may, I want to make the body aware that, in my judgment, it is far more preferable to have a state lottery, which has proven successful in many states in this country, successful in terms of being able to raise significant sums of additional revenue. That is far more preferable than any form of taxation. In my judgment, Mr. Speaker, perhaps the time has come for this state to give serious consideration to additional ways of raising revenue other than the sole reliance on oil revenues. I trust that my colleagues will take the time to review House Bill 338, and I look forward to their support of it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Any further special orders? Representative Miller.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that this body stand in adjournment till 11 a.m. Monday, April 1.
Any objections? So ordered.